Welcome to a Weird News Roundup presented by the Something Offbeat podcast. We dive into strange tales out of Odyssey stations across the nation. This week, we're talking about traditions. From wacky spring rituals like April Fool's Day and Dingus Day to funeral bread, New York's little-known history of fairies, and a tradition in Jefferson Parish, Louisiana, that recently resulted in a court battle over bird poop. In fact, let's start there. Harahan, Louisiana, right outside of New Orleans. Now, imagine a courtroom full of people in purple Louisiana State University and Mardi Gras shirts, all there to support a man who has made welcoming special birds to their neighborhood an annual tradition. The thing is, it's not a tradition that everybody in the area is fond of. Here's Tommy Tucker out of Odyssey Station WWL in New Orleans, getting all the details from WWL Louisiana reporter Meg Ferris.
Tommy, I tell you, this has become an explosive issue that people from way, way far away from Harahan have gotten involved in. So purple martins are a type of bird, and they migrate up from the rainforest from Brazil. And over the centuries, because of habitat loss, they are dependent on us, on humans, to supply a safe house, a place for them to make a nest. So there are these gourds that people hang where the purple martins can go down like a little tunnel and then have their nest and lay their eggs, and their hatchlings come in this little safe house. Okay, so a man who lives in Harahan has been making these houses since he was a little boy with his grandfather and father. Well, for the last 35 to 38 years in Harahan, he has been putting up these gourds, and he has 52 of them. And every year, these purple martins know, which is so fascinating to me.
Wait, I was going to ask you
Brazil,
that. Is that
they
what you're
know
me?
To go to his house, I mean, on Windsor Street. They know, yes. That is, who knows, even scientists are looking into that. Is it the magnetic field, you know, that they feel, that type of thing? They have an internal GPS. Mm-hmm. And so they go there for the spring, and then they go back to Brazil. So what happens is he has a few hundred every spring now in this colony. And there are four neighbors in that neighborhood who are complaining about the massive amount of droppings on their car, on the sidewalks, on the patio furniture, mailboxes, you name it. So 3 years ago, one neighbor who was newer to the neighborhood than the other people mm-hmm. started a complaint, and that's how the whole court case got started. So it all came to a head yesterday in a courtroom filled to capacity, 70 people. Wearing purple from all over the area, even as far up as Denham Springs in that area, in support of the couple keeping keeping these gourds in the backyard. Okay, so here's what each side says. One side who's against them says, move them to the River Badger. Move these gourds to the River Badger. And that would take care of everything. You can have a few, but not this many. It's just too much. The other side says, well, if we move them, they won't know to go there. We already have 44% fewer in Louisiana. The colony is going to die off. The side with the purple martin says, we will pay for car washes, pressure wash, your whole area, so the droppings aren't there. The other side says, well, no, then I have to go to a car wash every few days. That's on me. I have to let people in the backyard to clean my furniture.
What did the judge say, Meg?
It was a long, deep discussion into bird poop, okay? And there were analysts who said there's berries and fruit in it. So those are other migratory birds that eat fruit, berries off of trees, because the purple martins, they don't eat mosquitoes. Those fly too low. They eat high-flying insects, so flies and that type of thing. So they're not going to have berries. Okay, so it's important, before I tell you how the judge ruled, that this is not a binding on-the-record court. Mm-hmm. This is called the Mayor's Court in Harahan. And basically, it was to see if they violated the nuisance ordinance in Harahan. So the judge ruled that they did violate, the Purple Martin people did violate the a nuisance ordinance in Harahan. So here's what happens. They need to clean up the poop and that type of thing, but he can't force the man to get rid of all these gourds. What happens now is the defense, they're going to appeal, and now it's going to go to a on-the-record, more serious court, the 24th Judicial Court, and that's where it goes. And that would be more binding as to whether or not they move these gourds. But there are people who testify that schools have gourds and parks have gourds, and that they put these all over to help the Purple Martin colonies increase, and that other people don't complain. They had many neighbors who weren't complaining, but there was a lot of behind the scenes thing where some sides don't feel they got a fair hearing, but that's a whole other story that needs both sides. So, you know, nothing's ever simple in Louisiana. No. There's always multi-layers.
Another polarizing tradition is one we all just experienced, April Fool's Day. Now, either you love the whimsical thrill of pranks, or are left hoping that people forget to add you to their prank list. Both camps might be wondering how the whole April Fool's thing got started in the first place. To explain, Associate Professor Owen Hamlin Lynch of Southern Methodist University's Meadow School of Arts and Communications, an expert in the study of humor, joined Odyssey Station KRLD in Dallas.
And what have you found as you've looked at April Fool's Day?
But humor is a fundamental part of what it is to be human. April Fool's has lots of different connotations that people say where it comes from. There was a Roman festival called Hilari, which is where the word hilarious comes from, which was around April Fool's Day, around the spring equinox and the old calendar. And it was supposed to represent the old, casting off the old and into the new, and the foolishness of that around spring. And that there are some people who argue it comes from there. There are other people who argue it came from when they switched calendars, because our New Year's used to start around April 1st. So it was when we were on the lunar year, it was the first full moon after. Typically, it's also when Easter is, for example, after the spring equinox, and it was supposed to symbolize new life. And there's sayings that, you know, when people who didn't know that the calendar had switched to the Gregorian calendar, that they were the fools, and so that's where the tradition came from. There was also this in medieval times, they used to call it the Feast of Fools, which also happens around this time of year, mixing, and it was when in abbeys, it's when the abbot and the priors or the young monks would switch roles, and for the day, which was like the topsy-turvy day, they call it Feast of Fools, like the lowest of the community would be made the abbot, and the abbot would then service the youngest of the community, and they would decree silly laws for that year, like the abbot had to wear a funny hat or a carrot on their nose or something like that. And so it became a way of kind of questioning hierarchy and sometimes the silliness of hierarchy in everyday. And so there's lots of different traditions, but what you always find is that in this time of year, the switching over from the winter when things were dead into life, around the world, there are festivals around humor that look at like laughter, humor, new life. One of the reasons we have eggs and bunnies at Easter, mixing the sacred and the profane. It's pretty common. So there's no exact origin, but whether it traces back all the way to ancient Rome or whether it was the switchover of the calendars in the 1700s to the calendar we use today, that's where those traditions started.
A notable example of one of these other humor-centered spring traditions is Dingus Day. In Europe, this was a tradition of water fights around the time of Easter. Over the years, it's taken on new shapes, especially here in the U.S. Eddie Dubashevitz, co-founder of the Buffalo Dingus Parade, joined Odyssey Station WBEN in Buffalo to explain how things have changed.
Well, in the early 60s, in 1961, the Chopin Singing Society really started this modern-day dingus. You know, they were a social club that was on the east side of Buffalo. it's such an obscure thing. I mean, people observed it always, you know, at home. Maybe the parents would splash a little water on their kids in the morning to wake them up or vice versa. And it was a real low-key thing. It's a real low-key thing in Poland. When I went to Poland a couple of times and tried to explain to them what we do here in Buffalo, they looked at me like I was from another planet. It took on a life of its own. So, you know, these crazy people on the east side of Buffalo are chasing each other around with buckets of water and pussy willow branches. So in 2007, when we started doing the parade, we just kind of reignited it. We hipped it up. We targeted younger people specifically to let them know that it's okay to come and twirl around to a polka song and have fun with it.
Stay tuned after the break to learn about a Minnesota tradition that seems like a prank, but isn't. We checked. Thank you for listening to this special presentation of Weird News from Odyssey's Something Offbeat. We're talking all about traditions today, and Minnesota has some interesting food traditions. There's the casserole-adjacent hot dish, and some dishes with roots in Scandinavia, like lutefisk. A recent headline in the Minnesota Star Tribune referenced a niche food tradition in the state that some Minnesotans don't even know about. It's called funeral bread. If you think that name sounds a bit ominous, you might not be too far off track, depending on your taste in food, that is. According to the Adam and Jordana show out of Odyssey Station WCCO News Talk in the Twin Cities, this dish includes, drumroll please,
cinnamon bread topped with cheese whiz and green olives.
That sounds vile.
It does sound vile, but it's like a real thing.
Is it really?
It's called funeral bread.
Cheese whiz?
It's a staple of potlucks offerings in parts of Minnesota and North Dakota. The Star Tribune is highlighting it, complete with a picture there. It does not look appealing. Yes. I don't know why they call it funeral. Well, it's called funeral bread because apparently it would pop up like you'd have the funeral at the church, and then the church ladies would make a spread of these cinnamon bread with cheese whiz and olives.
And somebody's dead. Could we have a little respect?
I was going to say.
Could we spend a little money? I understand maybe it's a cost-saving measure, but maybe we can afford real cheese. Because cinnamon bread with cheese, maybe that's not so bad. But then the olives on, or is it olives or
yes,
pickles?
No,
olives?
Green olives.
I love green olives.
I do,
and
too.
And I love cinnamon bread.
I do, too. Not together.
Just not together.
No.
Yeah.
And I don't think cheese is making it.
And if somebody can say, like, well, the olives are for salty tears and the cinnamon is for the sweetness of life and the cheese is the glue that holds it. If somebody can give an explanation, if this is a tradition and meaning,
well,
I will absolutely retract and get on board.
It's a real thing. Somebody's saying rye bread, not cinnamon bread. Cinnamon bread is the original version of it. Okay. People have substituted with rye bread, but cinnamon bread apparently is the original version of it. And I've never had any, I've never even seen this offered anywhere.
Me neither, no.
So.
I never even heard of funeral bread.
Well,
but that's interesting.
Yeah, and again, what's with funerals? Providing us some weird culinary treats. Here's,
right.
here's a text we got here. How's this for weird? The funeral lunch ladies in mother's hometown serve this at their funeral. Wonder bread with cheese whiz covered with crushed potato chips. They then sort of arrayed them like shingles. I asked about the chips. They were only there to keep the cheese from sticking to the next slice of bread.
Oh, my goodness. What's with the cheese whiz? Why is that a
thing? I don't know. Is that just cheaper than buying cheese?
Or maybe it's prettier because you can make it like, right? Doesn't it still come out of a nozzle? Right, like a whipped cream?
No, I think it's like a
you don't like
a jar of cheese whiz. Oh. You're thinking of Easy Cheese.
Yeah, okay.
That's the wonderful, by the way. Easy cheese is still.
I don't understand this tradition, so please educate us as to how this became a tradition, why it became a tradition. Like, if there is some meaning to this, I would love to know.
I'm still a little bit nervous that this funeral bread thing is all just a big prank, so I did some digging. To start, the Star Tribune's report said that it is especially popular in Roseau, near the Canadian border. I also found an August 2023 Facebook post in the group Fargo Moorhead Eats that mentioned a, quote,
cinnamon swirl bread with cheese whiz and green olives that the poster said was served at a funeral. Even earlier than that, a site called Untwisted Vintage posted a recipe for, quote, funeral sandwiches in 2017. The recipe called for raisin bread, Welsh rarebit cheese, and olives. But the writer mentioned that it was inspired by funeral bread made by her husband's family in Minnesota. Those original Minnesota funeral sandwiches featured processed cheese. As I mentioned earlier, many Minnesota residents have Scandinavian roots and carry on food traditions from that region. Now, I'm not sure that we can really trace this modern funeral bread back to Scandinavian Vikings, but the website Taste of History does have a recipe for something called, quote, Viking funeral bread. That bread was apparently made with, among other things, blood. Another recipe on that same site noted that Vikings likely included blood in their bread recipes as a method of preservation. You know, maybe cinnamon and cheese and olives aren't so offbeat after all. For our final story, we're looking into the fairies of New York City. This traditional belief that fairies inhabited the region, now known for its bustling traffic and skyscrapers, dates back to the time before it was even called New York. Andrew Warburton, author of Fairies of New England, Little People of the Hills and Forests, joined the Paranormal 360 podcast out of Odyssey Station WCCO News Talk to discuss this secret history.
Do the Fae prefer the nature areas, or do they mingle in the Bronx? Is there?
Well, so I thought when I started writing and researching the book, I thought that I would mainly find stories from the Adirondacks, you know, maybe the Mohawk Valley, the Catskills, and I did find stories from those areas. But yeah, really, it did surprise me how the New York boroughs all have fairy stories from them, and so. Yeah, they definitely seem to be. I mean, before Manhattan was Manhattan and the Lenape lived there, they had stories about forest dwarfs, which I also write about in the book. They have quite a few stories about and spiritual beliefs about this dwarf.
What did they associate with that being? Did they think it was flesh and blood, or was it something more ethereal, something more transdimensional?
It's difficult to, for me as a, you know, an Englishman to kind of describe Lenape spirituality, because, you know, I think in those terms as well, you know, like spirit and body, this dualism. Whereas I think the Lenape might have a wholly different way of seeing things, because they do describe this dwarf as a spirit, but they also see him as a physical body. It was a spiritual phenomenon or event to encounter this dwarf. There's an elder called Witta Ponoxwe from the 19th century. He said that the Lenape originally all had the ability to see this dwarf, but over time he believed, you know, he was writing in the 19th century when, you know, things had changed. The Lenape had been forced to move out to Oklahoma. And he said that not everyone could see this dwarf anymore. So obviously it was a spiritual experience. And somehow he believed that the Lenape didn't have an access to this spiritual vision. It's a good question. And I think we have to be careful about imposing, right. I can easily do if I'm not careful. But that was before Manhattan. With the Lenape tribe,
you've got, did they lose that ability to see these things? Like children see ghosts more readily. As we age up and we lose that innocence, do we lose that ability? You know, it does seem to beg that question as well.
Yeah, Witta Ponoxwe definitely thought that way, that the Lenape had lost some of their innocence, like you said. But there are stories from Oklahoma and Kansas about Lenape who had moved there, or been forced really to move there. And they still saw these little people. Like there are stories about a woman in Kansas who was a Lenape woman, and she was coming home and she saw little people in her own home. Then there are people who were at a ceremonial dance. They went and they went out into the woods and saw these little people all around them. So I think that obviously it's not the, you know, colonialism didn't wipe out these things. The Lenape still saw these beings. And then elsewhere, you know, throughout the folklore of indigenous people throughout New England and New York, the little people often are associated with children. So it's children who can see these beings. It's children who are taken to this sort of other world, whether it's underground, in the rocks or mountains, or in kind of deep gorges. It would be the children who are taken and taught ceremonial dances, perhaps, or taught spiritual wisdom. So yes, definitely, there is a sense in which it's associated with that kind of childlike vision that we maybe have lost.
Thank you so much for listening to this Weird News Roundup from the Something Offbeat podcast. This episode was written and produced by me, Lauren Berry. Special thanks to Tommy Tucker out of WWL in New Orleans, KRLD 1080 out of Dallas, WBEN out of Buffalo, and to The Adam and Jordana Show and Paranormal 360, both out of WCCO News Talk in the Twin Cities. You can find these stations on the Odyssey app. You can also find these shows, including the Something Offbeat podcast, on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.